Have you ever wondered why it is that some people look at a glass and see it as half full and others half empty? I know the basic responses that we've learned in the past have been attitude makes the difference, and it does. But a greater understanding beyond attitude allows us to understand why certain people select certain aspects of any experience and focus on it while they delete, distort, or generalize other aspects of human communication. The quality of our lives as human beings is determined by the quality of the patterns of our behavior. As we have discussed in this program, people's behaviors come from the way they represent things and also from the way they use their physiology. But there is a key question we haven't answered, and that is how come some individuals receive the same stimuli? For example, two people see a glass of water. One represents it as being half full, the other represents it as half empty. This is a basic question that we've answered in the past by saying, well, one has a good attitude and the other person has a poor attitude. But the answer is actually much more specific than that. There are certain factors that determine how much of any experience we become consciously aware of. In other words, in any experience in life, there are almost unlimited stimuli in which we could become aware. But our conscious mind can only handle so many pieces of information at one time. However, our unconscious mind can handle an almost unlimited array of activities, billions of activities that are happening in any split second inside of your body. So how do we take all of the stimuli that's hitting us and decide on what to give our attention to? What helps us to decide this is something we call metaprograms. Metaprograms are similar to beliefs and values in that they filter what we become aware of in the outside world. In fact, metaprograms determine whether you see the glass as half full or half empty. As we said earlier, the brain operates very much like a computer. If in front of you, you have a keyboard and the external environment pushes that keyboard in various ways, that is the stimulus from the environment. But do you see exactly what's being punched on the keyboard up on the screen? Not exactly. How that information is arranged, what actually shows up on the screen, is determined by the software you use. For example, if you've ever used a computer and if a word processing program is in place while you tap the keyboard, then what will happen is those letters will come up in the forms of sentences and paragraphs up on the screen. If, however, you take that software out and you put some new software in that creates spreadsheets, and then you tap on the computer board, even though you've given the same stimulus, it is now reorganized and represented in a different way. It may be represented in long columns rather than paragraphs. So the same stimulus from the outside world is being processed differently. In computer terms, we call this sorting. Sort is a term used in computers to relate to the process of how information is organized. Human beings also have to sort out their experience. If a bunch of things happen at once, you have to sort them out. How you sort things out is determined by your metaprograms, your prearranged filters for human experience. Let me give you a few examples of what metaprograms are, because by understanding them, you can predict in advance how human beings will respond to just about any situation, and you can learn to communicate to people in a way that will allow you to motivate and persuade them with greater precision than ever before. Here's one of the first metaprograms. We call it the direction metaprogram, whether a person moves primarily towards or away from situations. Now, what does this mean? Well, all human behavior is the result of one of two desires, either the desire to gain pleasure or the desire to avoid pain. I know that must sound like a generalization, and it's true. Why did you invest in this program? Probably the desire to develop more in your life, to gain pleasure, to gain new choices. Those are all examples of moving towards. There are some people, however, who bought this program because they're tired of where their life is and they don't want to live this way anymore. Now, how is this important? Well, it's extremely important to know how someone predominantly organizes themselves in terms of moving towards or away from. The way you can find out how people motivate themselves is to ask them a simple question. Ask a person, what's important to you about working? Or what do you want in a job? If the person says to you, I want people to leave me alone, then immediately by the way they respond, you know that they are primarily moving away from rather than towards. If the person says, well, what's most important to me in a job is my ability to be creative, to help other people, to produce new results, then you can tell by their answer that they're moving towards. You can ask this question about just about anything. What's important to you in a relationship? What's important to you about learning? And you can notice by the way the person responds what direction they're moving. Now, how is this important to human behavior? I've always believed that everyone moves towards, that everyone's trying to gain something. That's what motivates most of us. When I began to learn about NLP, I discovered that I made a lot of assumptions that weren't true. For example, I would always try and motivate someone to learn by saying, God, look what you can gain, look what you can produce, look at the new results you can create for your life if you come and learn this. And there are some people that would look at me and go, I don't care. And I couldn't believe it. I thought for sure everyone would be motivated in that way. But the reality is the only way you're going to motivate a person who moves away from is to talk to them about what they will lose if they don't go to this seminar, if they don't listen to this tape. The way to motivate that person is to come along and say, listen, if you don't do this, you're going to always wish you had. If you don't do this, you're going to continue to live the life you've been living in the same desperate way. And when you talk this way, to me, that sounds terribly harsh. To me, that sounds like, you know, manipulative almost. And I would be very upset if someone did that with me. But for somebody who moves away from, they respond very effectively to moving away from. You can talk about all that they're gained till you're blue in the face, and they won't respond. A great example comes from a friend of mine. His name is Captain John Rondon. He's the head of the Salvation Army in the South Bronx of New York City. When you go to the South Bronx, you get the impression that Harlem is Beverly Hills. Buildings are blown out, there are no windows, people are drugged out lying all over the streets, and this man has committed his life to making a difference there. And he prides himself on knowing quite a bit about human motivation and emotion. When I explained about the importance of moving towards and away from, he shared with me an experience that he had that taught him the importance of using moving away from strategies. One night he was out late in the evening on a frozen snowy night when he found a man lying deep in the snow, freezing to death. He propped the man up and gave him some coffee. As he put the coffee in the man's hand, he heard the sizzle as his skin burned against the cup. When he took the cup out, the skin was still stuck to the cup. Not a pretty sight. He knew it was critically important to get this man some shelter, and there was no room at the Salvation Army, not one bed, not one space. So he went to a church, and he knocked on the door and knocked on the door, and finally the minister came down, and he explained the situation and said the Salvation Army would pay for it if they'd put this man up for the night. And the minister of the church said that this is not the job of the church, but the Salvation Army's job, and told him to figure something else out and slam the door in his face. Well, Captain John obviously was not very excited by this response. He quoted the man a bit of scripture and then tried to come up with some more solutions. He knocked on door after door after door, and no one would support. He appealed to people. He said, look, this man is part of your community. He is dying. He is freezing to death. I just need your help. No one would help. No one would even open their doors. Finally, a local drug dealer in the area that Captain John had met and helped saw him and saw his plight and said, Captain John, I can get you a place for this guy to stay. Just go over to John Smith's house over here. Captain John said, well, I've already tried that. I appealed to him as a Christian man. I appealed to him as a member of the community. There's absolutely no way he won't even open his doors. He said, Captain John, you just don't know how to talk to people. He said, I'll handle it. I'll be right back. Captain John waited, watched the man go up the stairs, watched him carry on a conversation for 3 or 4 minutes. The next thing he knew, the man came down the stairs, opened the garage, and said, the man can stay here as long as he wants. Captain John was flabbergasted. He said, how did you do that? He said, well, you just got to know how to talk to people. He said, but I asked him, I begged him, I offered every possibility. I showed him how he could be helping this man's life. He said, that's not how you talk to people around here, Captain John. He said, what you got to do is you got to let them know what's going to happen if they don't do it. He said, what I did is I told the man, I said, listen, I just want you to know I've already cased your house. I can tell you where all the windows are. I can tell you what kind of TV you have. And I was just about to steal everything you've got. Now, if you are a good man and you allow this man to stay in your garage and allow him to stay warm, then I won't have to rip you off. If you don't, I'm going to steal everything you own. Interesting power of giving someone something to move away from. Much more effective in this context than something to move towards. All human beings will move away from certain things and towards other things. The key is to be happy in our lives. We need to move towards what's most important to us and away from what's not important from us. And the same process happens with children. See, if you go to your child and you start telling him, you need to get better grades because if you don't, you're not going to get in college, that may work if the child moves away from. If he moves towards, he'll feel insulted. He doesn't like to be told what he's going to lose. People who move towards don't want to hear that. However, if he's a moving away from kid and you tell him, hey, you got to do better in classes because if you do better, you can choose any school that you want, that won't work with a kid that moves away from. The only time that works is with a child who moves towards. How do you find out? Ask your child, what's important about learning? What's important about school? If he says, well, getting out, then you know he's moving away from. If he says, well, learning is really important because it'll give me new choices later in my life, then he's moving towards. The key, again, is knowing where people are rather than wishing they were a certain way. You can wish all day long that people are all motivated towards, but that's not the reality. Once you know where people are and you change your approach, you can change your results right now. Here's another metaprogram. This is called a reason metaprogram. This tells us why people do something or why they're presently doing something. And the distinction we want to make is the person doing things in his life based upon possibility or necessity. This is a critical distinction to make. The way you find this out is you ask somebody, why did you choose your present job? Why did you choose your present car? Why did you choose anything? And you notice how they respond back. If the person says, well, I chose my present job because, you know, I looked at many different possibilities and it seemed like the best company, then obviously they're sorting by possibility. If a person says, well, I'm at my present job because there was no other choice, I mean, I just had to get a job now and this is the only thing available, then they're operating out of necessity. Now, why is it important to know this? Well, once again, you can try and motivate somebody about possibilities till you're blue in the face. If they operate out of necessity, they're not going to respond. I remember one time I was working with this young man, and I kept trying to get him excited about what was possible. And he just said, I just don't see it as necessary for me to make these changes, Mr. Robbins. And he didn't. One day I learned about possibility and necessity, and I let him know he didn't have a choice. He absolutely had to do this now. Instantly, he took action and produced the result that I was trying to motivate him to do for a long period of time. How a person uses their metaprograms is determined by the state they're in as well. Most people move away from life-threatening situations, for example. Most people move towards situations that seem to be a total win for them and for others. Whether a person operates out of possibility or necessities is often associated to where they are in their life. If they're barely getting by, they may start focusing on necessities, versus if they're doing very well, they may begin to focus on possibilities. Once again, understanding where people are gives you more information about how to communicate in a way that produces the results you want. Here's the third metaprogram. This one we call the frame of reference. The frame of reference basically shows you how a person judges their own actions. Do they judge whether something is effective or ineffective by going inside themselves to note it, or do they check out in the real world? Do they see how other people feel about it? What you want to know when you find out about someone's frame of reference is whether they have an internal frame of reference or external. The way you find this out is you ask a person, how do you know when you've done a good job? A person who's internal will say, I don't know, I just feel it, I just know it inside. A person who's external will say something like, well, when people tell me, or when people share with me, or when people give me feedback, or when I get rewarded, or by my paycheck. The truth is, many people are not one or the other. Some people have a balance, and I believe the ideal would be a balance. That is, if you're totally internal, then you don't take any feedback at all. You just know how things are, and you do them that way. If you're totally external, you're always responding to what other people's plan is for your life. The balance is the choice that we want to have, so we get a strong idea of what's right inside, and we also get feedback from the outside world. The ideal situation is to have the choice to change how you sort with each one of these metaprograms based upon your outcomes. For example, there are certain things we should all move away from. Some children, for example, move so towards that all they know is what they want, and they don't look at the ramifications. They don't look at the consequences of what they're doing. And as a result, since they're not moving away from anything, they just keep moving towards, and they do things that later on they have to pay the price for. Some people do things only out of necessity. As a result, they will never make much of their lives. Some people do things only out of possibility, and they're moving towards, so they never notice what they have to do to make things happen. They're only willing to do the stuff that is fun. Some people only have an internal frame of reference. As a result, they don't take feedback very well. What would be an ideal leader, for example? Well, an ideal leader might be someone who has a strong internal frame of reference who also is willing to take external feedback. How can we use frame of reference to motivate and persuade people? Well, if someone has an internal frame of reference, would you motivate them by coming to them and saying, hey, I really think you ought to do this because everyone else is doing it, and I just think it's really fabulous? That person is going to respond with a weird look and say, I'm not interested. Because they don't care about what other people think about it. What they care is what they think. And if you try to appeal to them by telling them what you think, you'll lose a certain level of rapport and a certain level of credibility. If with someone who has an internal frame of reference, you instead say, I don't know what's right for you in this area. I'm sure you know. What do you think? That person is going to respond much more positively to that. Or if you say to them, if you ask yourself inside, you might be able to tell me what you should do. If a person has an external frame of reference and you say, I don't know what you should do, they get confused. They want you to tell them, do this because this person did it and this person did it and therefore it can work for you as well. That makes a big difference for someone who's externally oriented. What about acknowledgement? Well, in a business environment, somebody who has an internal frame of reference needs a lot less acknowledgement than someone who's external. The external person needs an acknowledgement to know they're doing a good job, and they need it fairly constantly and consistently. How can you use these to persuade? Well, I remember I did a free guest event not long ago. And in the guest event, after I was done, a man walked up to me and he said, "I'm not sold. I don't see it as being necessary to go to your program." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry to hear that." He said, "Well, I'm not convinced. And I think if you're so successful, if you're so persuasive, I think you should try and convince me. Why don't you convince me to go to your program?" Well, based upon the conversation I heard him have with the person he was next to before he got up there, I knew a lot about his meta programs already. First of all, people with external frames of reference rarely come up and attack you verbally because they're looking for feedback. They don't have such a strong frame inside. Also, he said that he didn't see it as being necessary, which obviously is what's most important to him, that this be a necessity. And I also knew that he was moving away from, based upon a conversation I overheard him having while he was waiting in line to talk to me, where he told his friend that, "You know what, I'm tired of this. I don't want to lose any more of this time that I have, and I don't want to lose this, and I don't want to lose that." I heard those words, and I knew he was primarily important to him was not losing, in other words, moving away from. So my response to him could have been, "Well, here's why you should go. Let me tell you all the reasons you should go. Let me introduce you to people who succeeded because of this program. Let me tell you what's happened in my life." But that never would have worked, because this man has an internal frame of reference. I turned to this man, and instead of challenging him back or trying to persuade him with external frames of reference, I came back to him and said, "I could never convince you. You're the only person in the world who can ever convince you of anything." He looked a little puzzled at first, and then he kind of half smiled because he realized it was true. I had more rapport here because I understood how his brain really responds to the environment. He said, "Well, but if you have so much skill, you should be able to convince me." I said, "Listen, you're the only one who knows who would lose if you didn't go to this program, and you missed out on all the things that you could change, all because you weren't willing to take the necessary time to make a decision." Now, I didn't say to him, "You'll lose if you don't go to my program." If I would have said that, he never would have attended, because that would have been me telling him what to do. Listen to what I said again. I said, "You're the only person who knows who would lose if you didn't go to this program and didn't do the necessary things that allowed you to create change." Now, notice what I did here. One is I said, "You're the only one." So I recognize the fact that he has to make the decision. I developed rapport by pointing out that he had an internal frame of reference. Secondly, I said, "You're the only one who knows who would lose." Lose requires and is saying to him, "Hey, you're going to lose something," and he moves away from. So that motivates him more than if I say, "God, if you were to do this, you'll get all this good stuff in your life." And I also said, "Because you didn't take the necessary time." He sorts by necessity. So what I've done in one sentence is I've appealed to all the things that cause him to move and to be motivated and to be persuaded. I've appealed to his internal frame of reference. I've appealed to the fact that he doesn't want to lose things, and I've appealed to the fact that this is a necessity. He took one look at me and he said, "You know, that's right," and he turned around, walked back, and signed up. This could never have happened if I would have approached this in my old way, which would have been to try and sell him on all the things he would have gained by coming and all the possibilities of what could happen in his life and tell him to talk to all the other people that got results. That never would have worked. So again, if you know the right key to punch, you can produce any result in anyone's nervous system. Metaprograms give us those new choices. Let's look at the next metaprogram. We call this the convincer metaprogram. The convincer metaprogram shows us what a person has to experience in order to become convinced of anything. The convincer metaprogram has two parts to it. In other words, in order to become convinced to change what we believe, we first have to have a certain set of representations occur. That is, certain senses of ours have to be triggered. So how do we find this out? Well, we ask a person, "How do you know when a coworker is good at what they do? Do you have to see them do it? Do you have to hear about them doing things? Or hear them talk about what they do? Do you have to actually do it with them? Or do you have to read about their performance?" Now, by asking this, you're going to find out which of the five senses is most important to this person in having them become convinced. If they're from Missouri, that's the show me state, the generalization would be they need to see it. That is, if they're more visually oriented, they may have to see it to believe it. Other people don't have to see it, they just need to hear about it or hear the person talk as if they know what they're talking about and then they believe it. Other people have to do it with them. They have to have hands-on experience. Other people believe when they read. And some people have a combination of things. They say, "Well, I believe somebody's good at what they do when I see them do it and when I hear other people say that they're also good." So now you know the two elements that are necessary for that person to begin to become convinced. So that's the first portion of finding out how people get convinced. The second portion is, not only do we need a stimulus, that is, to have some of our senses stimulated in a certain way for us to become convinced of something, but we also have to do it in a certain period of time. And the way you find this out is you ask the person, how often would this person have to demonstrate to you that they're good in order for you to become convinced? Do they have to just do it one time? We call that automatic. Or do they have to do it a number of times, like two or three? Do they have to do it over a period of time, like days or weeks or months? Or do they have to do it every time? So those are the four options. Some people have to see someone do something. If they see it, then they know it, and then we have to know how often they have to see it. So some people need to see the result or see a person produce a result one time, and then they know it. They know that person is good at what they do until they show them otherwise. Other people have to see it two or three times. Other people need to see results over maybe a 2 or 3 month period. After that period of time, then they believe someone is good at what they do. Then they become convinced. Other people, the people we call consistent, are never convinced. If you're in sales, you probably recognize this kind of person. I'm sure you've had people when you went to show your product, where you showed it one time or had the person use it one time, and immediately they were a customer for life. They didn't question it any further. Other people, you had to call on them a couple of times. Other people, you had to work on them for months, and then finally they became a customer. Other people become customers, but every month you come in, the guy says to you, "Why should I use your product?" You go, "Harry, you've been using this for 9 years. You ask me this every single month." He goes, "Yeah, why should I use it this month?" Those kinds of individuals, of course, are very fun in the persuasion game. Now, does this only relate to business? Of course not. You also have to become convinced of anything. For example, how do you get convinced that someone loves you? For some people, they need to see it. Other people need to hear that you love them. Other people need you to show and demonstrate to them. Other people need to read it by way of you giving them cards. How often do you have to do this for this person to feel loved? Well, some people, if you say you love them or show them or touch them or write them a card one time, they'll know from that day forward that you love them. Obviously, these people are in the minority in the culture, but there are plenty there. Other people have to see you demonstrate your love in certain ways, visually, auditorily, or kinesthetically, 2 or 3 times. Other people, if you've been with them a year, now they know you love them. It takes a certain period of time. Other people, they never know you love them. You have to tell them and reassure them every day that you love them. If you haven't told them today or shown them today, they begin to question whether you love them at all. I'm sure you've had this experience in various relationships. So the point in metaprograms is things do not happen randomly. People become convinced in a very specific way. Your brain is just like a computer. Certain exact things have to happen in certain orders and sequences, and then you become convinced. That's what this metaprogram will show you.